Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But please hold your calls until we ask for them, and I don't think we'll probably be asking for calls, at least in this first hour, because we have with us on the line Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about what makes America different from any other country in the world. And that is our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights, that were built upon the concept of self-government. It was John Adams who said, our Constitution would not work for any other. Our Constitution requires a moral and religious people. It would not work for any other, because it was built on the concept that we would govern ourselves under the rule of God, and government would not interfere with us at all. The power of government was simply to maintain a stable society, but not to provide for the people, not to have anything to do with the individual. Matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were all to be dealt with by the state. Because, you see, our founding fathers feared the power of government, and they knew that men are corrupt and could never be given power. And so it was that Thomas Jefferson, of writing about our government, said, "In matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution." And so the secret of America and our freedom was the fact that our Constitution limited the power of government. Now, we have people at the highest levels of both political parties today who believe in an all-powerful state and a ruling elite. And little by little, they erode the very foundation of our constitutional guarantees of freedom. They don't even, in many instances, teach the Declaration of Independence in our schools. And they certainly, many schools actually in textbooks, leave out the idea that our freedom come from God, from the Creator. And we have a real problem today because so very few people really understand the very essence of our freedom. But our the bulwark of our freedom is not our frowning battlements or our army or navy. It is this love of liberty which is in the hearts of all people in every nation everywhere. But it was this very essence, this desire for freedom, that gave us this Constitution. Isn't it a shame we're losing it, and most people don't even know, and that even worse is that so few people care? Well, certainly our guest tonight does care. His name is Pastor David Whitney, and he has dedicated himself, as I have, to getting the truth out, and hopefully that you will follow along. You will learn about our Constitution, and you will help us reclaim our wonderful heritage of freedom. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a blessing, Dr. Stan, to be with you and your great listeners who are absorbing and hopefully taking this information in, not only just for themselves, but that they might teach other people these truths. After all, the way we got into the mess that we're in today, with so much unconstitutional legislation being foisted upon us and our rights being stripped away piece by piece, the only way we've gotten here is that most Americans, as you say, do not know this. And they do not know this because they were not taught this. Schools fail to teach this, public schools by and large, but also most private schools over the past 50 years have failed to teach what is really basic civics, what every person needs to know in order to be a functioning citizen of this land. Really, in order to go to the ballot box and cast a vote, every person should have to take a course, either our course, Institute on the Constitution, or any other course that would teach them the original intent of the Founding Fathers in the Declaration, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights. Because if we don't know these things, then we cannot preserve our freedom.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. All right, David, pick the story up from there.
Well, in the past sessions, we've looked at Article 1, which deals with the legislature, Article 2, which deals with the executive, Article 3, which talks about the judiciary, and then Article 4, which talks about the relationships between the states, a particular problem that arose there during the time of the Articles of Confederation. Article 5 deals with how the Constitution can be amended. Only by the Article 5 provisions is any aspect of any change to be implemented. Not a living, breathing document, as we've been lied to and told that that's what it really is. It's no more a living, breathing document than a contract with, you have with your bank, or if you own a home, a contract you have with a mortgage company. That's not a living, breathing document. It is a fixed, unchanging standard that binds both parties to a set of commitments that they are making to do certain things and to not do certain things. And so our Constitution is designed to bind, as you say, the federal government with the chains of this Constitution to prevent it from doing anything that it does not have explicit permission to do. We the people, through this document, our Constitution, give our federal government the powers that it has. It must not have any other powers beyond those that we explicitly grant to it. For if it does, it has unrighteously and unlawfully usurped power that does not belong to it. In other words, it has become a tyrant. And that's a hard idea, I think, for many Americans to think that our federal government has become a tyrant. Every time our federal government violates the terms of this, our contract, our covenant with it, the U.S. Constitution, anytime it violates it, it has become tyrannical, because rather than amending the Constitution, which is a difficult process and it's not designed to be an easy process, but anytime they go do an end run around the Constitution, instead of amending it, they just start functioning as if it's a dead letter. They have become tyrants.
And of course, you can always tell who the tyrants are, because they use that term, oh, this is a living, breathing, Constitution, living, breathing document, constantly changing. Well, if it's constantly changing, you know, then why bother to have it at all? Basically, our Constitution was fixed in stone. It can be changed by the amendment process, but the tyrant doesn't want to go through that. He wants to expand the power of the government over the lives of the people simply by edict, by getting his people onto the Supreme Court, and whether they be Republicans or Democrats. And remember that seven of the current members of the Supreme Court were appointed by Republicans, and this is not something new. It's been this way all along. The Republicans have been putting in worse people than the Democrats. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, David Whitney has been just talking about the various aspects of the Constitution, the Article 1 dealing with the Congress, Article 2 dealing with the executive branch, Article 3 dealing with certainly the judicial branch, Article 4 dealing with the relationship to the states, Article 5 dealing with amendments. So you pick up the story there, David.
Yes, and Article 6 deals with a number of general matters, things such as debts and so on, but the most two important aspects in Article 6 are the Supremacy Clause, that the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. You need to remember that, because the liars in Washington, D.C. want to convince you that a Supreme Court opinion is the supreme law of the land, and whatever the Supreme Court says is law is law. No, that's not true. This document, our Constitution, says it is the supreme law of the land. Any law made that is in violation of the terms of this covenant, this contract, our Constitution, are null and void and should not be enforced by anyone. And this is particularly important for local officials. I'm actually running here in Maryland for a House of Delegates, and if I'm elected as a delegate to our state capital, Annapolis, I will take an oath not only to uphold the Maryland state constitution, but an oath to uphold the United States Constitution. That is, I am saying I will never pass a piece of legislation that violates the terms of the United States Constitution. The problem, again, in most state situations is the members of the legislature and the members of the governor's coterie, none of these people have ever studied the U.S. Constitution, let alone their state constitution. They go and do whatever they please. As soon as they get into power, they too act as tyrants. So it's the supreme law of the land, And anyone who understands that, who's in an official position, an official capacity, can resist unlawful legislation, or we shouldn't even call it legislation, statutes, where ink has been spilled on the page by some legislature and they claim it's law. It's not law, and the law enforcement officials, particularly the sheriff and a county, can resist unlawful statutes that violate the Constitution, because in the county, the supreme law enforcement official is the sheriff of that particular county, elected by the people, therefore accountable to the people. And if the people in a county understand what the sheriff is supposed to do, and they understand the Constitution, the United States, as well as their state constitution, they can come to the sheriff and appeal to him to abide by what is lawful. And if he will not, then they can remove him.
But, of course, you know, in practicality, David, whatever you're saying is right. But if there's a sheriff in America who really does stand up to the federal government and says you can't do this, they will spend millions of dollars to get him voted out of office or trump up some charges against him or come after him. The reality is there really are people in Washington, D.C., who do not believe in individual freedom and who don't believe in our Constitution, and they will target whether members of Congress, as they did with Don Hanson, mm-hmm. Congressman George Hanson of Idaho. I mean, he was a thorn in their side.
That's right.
He tried to do what was right, and they targeted him, and they sent him to prison on totally trumped-up charges. And after 10 years of misuse and torture, the Supreme Court finally said, sorry, George. Why, we had no authority there. Well, too bad. And, of course, I believe he subsequently died. But this is the sort of thing that goes on. People don't like to hear about that. But you need to hear the story of George Hanson and other congressmen. Now, there are a lot of corrupt congressmen there. And a lot, you know, they're just as bad as Randy Duke Cunningham and the others. But, of course, usually they leave them alone as long as they don't rock the boat. But you get an honest man there who's going to stand up and defy the powers that be, and they're going to come after him. What we need is so many congressmen that can't do that, and what we need are people who understand our Constitution and realize that the leaders of both parties believe in an all-powerful government. They believe in globalism. They believe, you know, that the government should provide and control the people. Both political parties are supporting this war over in Iraq and, mm-hmm. and the progression of America's empire, which is what this is really all about. I mean, why do we have troops in 130 nations throughout the world today? Why are we still occupying both Germany and Japan 60 years after the Second World War ended, and South Korea 50 years after the Second World War ended? All the time, of course, we have indirectly been financing the so-called enemies of South Korea, which is North Korea, under one guise or another. Oh, go ahead, though, David. You go ahead and tell the story.
Sure, yes. And the Supremacy Clause, very important to understand that it is the supreme law of the land, in spite of what anyone would tell us otherwise. The second aspect of that Article 6 to remember is everyone who holds office on the federal level and the state level is required to take an oath to support the Constitution. And an oath is a religious solemn vow made to Almighty God, endangering one's own eternal salvation if one breaks that oath. And that oath is to uphold and defend the Constitution. So when people say that the Constitution is not a religious document, I take them right here to Article 6 and say, what is an oath? And why is an oath required of every single office holder, both on federal and state level? Why is it not just a promise made to the electorate or whatever? And they usually don't have any good answer for that. They mumble something about, well, an oath, then maybe, you know, you can't make out what they're saying, because they don't have a good answer. This indicates that our founders only wanted Christians who believed in heaven and believed in hell, believed there was eternal punishment if they violated the oath that they had made before Almighty God. Well, stepping from Article 6 into Article 7, the final article of our Constitution, it deals with the issue of ratification. And the Convention decided that this Constitution would be effective when ratified by 9 states. Now, the difficulty here, and those who would criticize the Constitution on this grounds, would say, well, according to Article 13 of the Articles of Confederation, which were the law of the land up until the ratification of the Constitution, according to Article 13, unanimous consent was required to amend the Articles of Confederation. in one sense, you could see they really didn't amend the Articles of Confederation. They replaced them with our Constitution. And so they knew that they would have to have a different means for ratifying this Constitution than that process that required unanimous decision there in the Articles of Confederation, the reason being that Rhode Island would not ratify it, would not even send any delegates to the Constitutional Convention. So ratification of it was extremely unlikely, given that if they were to follow the means of the Articles of Confederation were to be altered or amended. And Congress approved this means of ratification and sent the Constitution on to the states for ratification. And the anniversary of that day when it was signed and sent on to the states happened this week. It happened on Sunday, 2 days ago, 17th of September. So Sunday of this week was Constitution Day for remembering this great event when Congress approved and ratified and sent it to the states for their ratification. So the Constitution, when nine states ratified it, became effective. That is, when New Hampshire on the 21st of June in 1788 was the ninth state to ratify, it became effective. Now, some people would say, well, wait a minute, that's not really fair. If all the states came in to the Articles of Confederation with an understanding that Articles of Confederation would not be changed, altered, or amended unless there was unanimous consent, but then nine of them stepped out of that and agreed to ratify a constitution. Well, that argument is blunted by this fact. Ultimately, all 13 states did ratify this constitution. In a sense, you could say the first nine states were joining a new union, a union based upon the Articles of Confederation and most of all based upon the Declaration, but the other three states could have stayed out of it and said, you know, or the other four states, they could have stayed out of it and said, no, we don't want to do that. We're going to continue to operate under the Articles of Confederation. We'll have our own union over here, you know, us four states and you nine states over there. What many people don't realize is that every single state joined our union, both the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution. They joined the union voluntarily. They came in voluntarily with the full understanding that they could exit from this same union voluntarily. In other words, a state had the right and the power to secede from the union just as it had the right and power to join the union. The states were the ones creating the federal government. What Abraham Lincoln got all confused about is he claimed that the federal government really formed the states. No, it was the other way around. The states were sovereign, independent entities, political entities of their own. They were states. They came together to form the federal union, first in the Articles of Confederation and later here in the Constitution. And so it's backwards to say that the states somehow had no right to leave the union, which is what Abraham Lincoln claimed. Basically, he said, you can only leave the union if you're going to leave it in a body bag. It's a ridiculous argument because that's the same argument, for example, if you joined a health club and you're going to exercise and get yourself in great shape and you signed on a contract and the contract you said you're going to fulfill these obligations, you're going to pay these dues monthly for 1 year. Now, at the end of that year, you said, I didn't use that health club as much as I thought I was going to and I didn't benefit as much as I had hoped, so I'm going to drop my membership. I'm no longer to pay my dues. What if the owner of the club came to you with a gun to your head and said, you ain't leaving this club except in a body bag? You'd say, wait a minute, let me look at that contract. Give me that contract again. I don't see any clause in here that says I leave this this health club in a body bag and I cannot exit this in any other way. And yet that's the argument that most Americans have swallowed today, that this union cannot be exited by any state. They're stuck with it. Because even though they voluntarily came into it, they cannot voluntarily leave it. Oh, yes, they can. Not only did the southern states do that and successfully do that for a time, before them, the New England states actually gathered in Connecticut to vote on seceding from the Union. They believed they could, and they were actually moving towards it. Middle Atlantic states also talked about seceding from the Union prior to the war between the states. They never actually had a convention to do so, but every state up until that point in time understood they could secede from the Union.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Pastor David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor David. But they were just simply talking about the Constitution, and of course he's been talking about Article 7, one of the most important parts of Article 7, and I think it is totally missed by most people, is this statement: the ratification of the convention of 9 states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. Done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present, the 17th day of September, in the year of our Lord, 1787, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 12th, in witness whereof, we have hereunto subscribed our names. Now, they felt it was very important. They were 12 years from the foundation of our nation. What was the foundation of our nation? The Declaration of Independence. And what did the Declaration of Independence say? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And by referring to the Declaration of Independence, they were referring to the fact that back in 1787, everybody knew that our freedom came from God. There was no question of that. And, of course, our freedom came from God. We were to be self-governing, and the power of the central government was to be limited. How far we've gotten from that today, where we find the government, the federal government, regulating literally everything and every aspect of our endeavor, and from the Endangered Species Act to many of the efforts to restrict our right to own property, all of this is aimed at centralizing all power in government. But the average individual has no concept of what's going on because they don't understand this basic concept. Freedom comes from God. Our founding fathers knew that, and that is why they track the origin of America 12 years earlier from 1787. And what was that? Why it was 1776. So you pick up the story there, David.
And that's a very important principle to remember, that they went on in that declaration to state the sole purpose of government, the only reason government exists, is to secure our God-given rights. It's interesting, I was at the county fair telling people about my candidacy, and I had two young men working with me, homeschoolers that helped me with the campaign, one 16, the other 18, and the 18-year-old, when the lieutenant governor who's running for the Senate here, Lieutenant Governor Steele's running for the Senate seat that's been vacated by Sarbanes, he went up to him and asked him one simple question. He said, "Lieutenant Governor, could you answer this question for me? What is the purpose of government?" Here's an 18-year-old asking an experienced and very knowledgeable politician a very simple question. What's the purpose of government? You know his answer? To provide a safety net. To provide a level playing field. All this socialist garbage. And it's interesting because the lieutenant governor was savvy enough to pick up that my young intern was not buying his arguments about the purpose of government, was not buying his answer. Actually, his answer was failing to express the American view of law and government as our declaration states it. And so he kind of asked the young man, "Isn't that what you believe? I mean, isn't that what you think?" And my young man answered beautifully. He said, "No, our founders said in the Declaration of Independence, there's a creator God, our rights come from him, and the sole purpose of government is to secure those God-given rights. Not to, and I'm adding to his words here, but not to redistribute your wealth, to give to, take from one to give to another, not to see that your seatbelt is buckled, not to determine how much water you flush down your toilet. All these things that our government is involved with are completely illegitimate. They're against the very purpose for which our form of government was founded by our great founders."
Hold up, we'll be back in just a moment with Pastor David. All right, David, why don't you go ahead and pick up? David was talking about when he was at a fair recently, and the gentleman who is running for office in Maryland, I think he's the lieutenant governor running for the Senate, or was he the governor running for the Senate?
No, he was the lieutenant governor running for the U.S. Senate.
All right, and fine, somebody had asked him what the function of government was, and of course this man is running for the U.S. Senate. Said, "Well, it's to provide a safety net, to be able to protect the people, you know." And of course, this young man was referring back to the Declaration of Independence, who said that, you know, after that statement about we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and governments are instituted among men. You know, to preserve those rights, you know, with the consent of the governed. Governments are instituted among men with the consent of the governed to preserve those rights. That was the only function of government, was to preserve our God-given rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness or property, however you'd want to use that phrase. But today, the function of government is to regulate every aspect, and that is the path to dictatorship, followed by every great empire in the past, and the path that we are following today. Go ahead, David.
So I told the young man after he basically gave me a synopsis of that conversation, I said, you know what? You are more qualified to be a United States senator than that lieutenant governor. And he was kind of surprised by my response. I said, no, it's true. It's true. You understand better what government is all about. And the way he has understood it is by studying the founders. He has taken our Institute on the Constitution course two times and attended various other lectures and read some of what the founders said and some of the Federalist Papers. And as an 18-year-old, he has a far better education and we would be far safer under that young man, 18 years old, because he knows what the purpose of government is and committed to it, than a well-seasoned politician who has a lot of wheels have been greased, and it could be Lieutenant Steele does actually make it to the U.S. Senate, and we will be far less safe under that man than we would be under an 18-year-old who understands that, which is really why I'm committed to raising up a generation of people who understand the Constitution, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights, understand the philosophy of government of our founders, because none of our rights are secure, none of our God-given privileges are safe while we have a government that is trying to do what these evil ones currently are trying to do. What they're trying to do is fool us into giving up our God-given rights for whatever they're offering in return. Oh, safety from the terrorists, or, you know, a good, happy, and prosperous retirement, you know, with Social Security. Whatever it is they're promising, you need to kind of look at them as tricksters. They're offering one thing, and what they're really offering, though, is slavery to a tyrannical government. Well, when we look at that, what is called the subscription clause, we mentioned already that it's very clearly connected with our Declaration of Independence. And that's because the Declaration of Independence is the foundation upon which our Constitution is built. You could look at it this way. The Declaration explains the why, the purpose of government. It talks about the philosophy of government. The Constitution talks about the how. It's kind of the nuts and bolts, how our rights are going to be protected. And you understand those two, then you can understand why, yes, the Constitution doesn't make a whole lot of philosophical statements about a creator God and securing our rights and those sort of things. It goes about doing exactly what the purpose of government is, that is to secure our God-given rights. Now, before they mentioned the 12 years since our founding as a nation, they mentioned this date, the date they were signing this declaration. As we mentioned earlier, it was September 17th. 1787, but they just don't say 1787, they say in the year of our Lord, 1787. Very important phrase. Our Lord refers here very clearly to the Lord Jesus Christ. It refers to his birth, which was the hinge of history, and it refers to the point at which they were signing in relationship to the birth of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, many people would say, well, David, that's insignificant. I mean, they're just putting a date on it, and that was the convention of that day to date everything from the birth of Christ. It doesn't mean anything whatsoever. But that's not so. You just have to look a few years down the road at the French Revolution. And the French Revolutionists were often making claims that may have sounded like those of our founders, but they were vastly different because they were not rooted in a biblical view of law and government at all. They were rooted in a secularist, an atheistic view of law and government, and they said that they were abolishing the calendar. And year one of the French Revolution was the year one of their new calendar. They ignored any reference to Jesus Christ on purpose.
And you know how their country headed up, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So within just a very few years, they were back under a dictator.
Yeah.
Well, David, go right ahead with the story.
Well, not only did they refer to the birth of the Lord Jesus Christ, they said our Lord Jesus Christ, the possessive plural there. They were stating that what they were doing here was forming a covenant between we the people and our civil government, and then our civil government and the Lord Jesus Christ, as well as we the people and our Lord Jesus Christ. In a sense, you would draw a triangle, we the people on one side, our civil government on the other side of the base of that triangle. The very top of that triangle would be the Lord Jesus Christ. It's a three-way covenant. And that's just like in Scripture when Jehoiada formed a covenant between the king and the people, and between the king and the Lord, and between the Lord and the people. Our founders were self-consciously following a biblical concept of covenant where the government, the civil government, enters into a covenant with the people. It's a binding covenant, and the reason why we is so essential for us to understand the terms of this, we have responsibilities and duties as citizens that if we do not fulfill them properly, we will lose our freedom, we will lose this form of government. Also, the reason an oath is required of every office holder, both on state and federal level, is that they are entering also, as an office holder, entering into this covenant. And if they are not going to be held accountable by we the people, they're making an oath that swears that God will hold them accountable. Like if we don't see them cheating and them stealing and doing things in violation of our covenant, our contract here with them in the Constitution, if we don't catch them, we can be sure that God ultimately will catch them. They will not escape the day of judgment without giving account for how they have ruled in our land. So this three-way covenant is what this phrase indicates they were consciously entering into as they signed this Constitution in the year of our Lord Jesus Christ. Although the phrase Jesus Christ is not in there, it's certainly implied the year of our Lord, 1787. So again, those who want to say that, oh, you know, this is a secular document, our founders had no religious intention, blah, blah, blah. No, that's a lie. And this subscription clause also proves that that is a lie. They had no reservation about calling Jesus Christ the Lord of these United States.
But of course they did not want to mention any one specific religious sect because they were afraid that they would, you know, the Anglicans would try to use the government for their purpose. Certainly the Congregationalists would try to use the government for their purpose, the Presbyterians or the Huguenots. And so it was a non-sectarian government, you know, but it was still a Christian nation. We'll be right back. And Dr. Stan, and of course the subject comes up then, is America a Christian nation? Yes, it was founded by Christians on Christian principles, and of course they signed this in the day of our Lord. And everybody there knew that when they required oaths to be taken, those were oaths to the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, certainly, although there was no requirement for a statement of religious belief to be a federal official, all the officials that at least came from the states were subject to the laws of the states, and most of the states at that time had religious requirements that would require, in many instances, to actually profess a belief in the Trinity before you could be elected to a state government or sent by the state to the federal government. So all of this talk about, oh, well, this was not a Christian nation, is simply foolish, and one only has to read the decision of the Church of the Holy Trinity versus the United States in 1892, to know that, and anybody would like, of course, to verify what this is about, will simply give us a call. We'll send you a copy of our latest newsletter. I guess it was my last newsletter, or the newsletter before that, is America a Christian Nation? And we'll be glad to send that free of charge. If you can't get it off the Internet, it's posted on the Internet, our July newsletter, but certainly we'll be glad to send one free of charge. But David, I want you to get out your telephone number and your website so people know how to get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution and what they will actually get when they get in touch with you.
Yes, we offer what we call a host kit because we don't want to scare people into thinking that they're going to be teaching the Constitution. No, you're hosting a class that teaches the Constitution by means of video or VHS or DVD. And Dr. John Eismo, in 12 lectures, half hour long, gives each those lectures gives the history, the background, the philosophy of government, as well as a working knowledge of the Declaration, the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, and talks as well as to what has happened since the inception and how we have drifted far, far away from our founders' design for our government. And also talking about the path back, how to return us to our constitutional republic. So this host kit is very simple for anyone to use. We put together answering all your questions and giving you the structure as the host, giving you the answers to the test questions that are included in each at the end of each session. So a host has everything they need in this host kit to conduct a successful class. You can order a host kit, purchasing it either online at our web store, and that is at iotconline.com. That stands for Institute on the Constitution, iotconline.com. Or you can call us toll-free during business hours and place an order there. And our toll-free number is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again is 866-730-9796. And it's very simple for anyone to do this, and we're encouraged. I was communicating with a fellow who graduated from our class this past spring, and he just completed a class this summer and graduated a group of folks, and he was very excited. They took hold of this, and that's what we love to see, that people take the class, they graduate from the class, and they say, hey, I can do this with a group of people. And this fellow grabbed a group of people at his church and formed a small group that met during the week for 12 weeks and went through the course, and he said, these guys are really on fire. He was very excited with the response that he received from conducting this class, and it didn't take a lot of knowledge on his part other than having gone through the class once himself. That made it a little easier, but it's even possible for someone who has never taken the class to purchase a host kit and put it on without any expertise or background in law or history, that it's basically functions on its own. You just need somebody to gather a group of people and put in the DVDs and also conduct the tests that are at the close of each lecture in between the lectures. So it's easy for your listeners to get a hold of us and to go ahead and get host kits so they can start the process of taking back the republic. And it's going to take an army of millions of Americans who understand these principles and then refuse to elect anyone to office who will not hold to these principles and remove people from office who refuse to obey the supreme law of the land. That is our Constitution. Well, you were mentioning that we are indeed a Christian nation, and I was just looking at a quote of the Supreme Court of Maryland just a few years after the Constitution was ratified. This is 1799, the case of Runkel v. Weinmiller. And it said in its statement, the Supreme Court of Maryland, religion is of general and public concern, and on its support depend in great measure the peace and good order of government, the safety and happiness of the people. By our form of government, the Christian religion is the established religion. That's speaking about the state of Maryland. So although on a federal level, national level, there was not established religions, in the individual states, there were established religions well up into the 1830s. And then it goes on to say, all sects and denominations of Christians are placed upon the same equal footing and are equally entitled to protection in their religious liberty.
But you know, I understand, David, that literally every one of our 50 states and their constitutions mentions God. They may not all mention Christianity, but they all mention God. And if that indeed is true, then how could the Supreme Court have taken God and prayer out of our schools? Other than that, there were wicked people in the Supreme Court who wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, or at least the godly foundation of this country.
And that's indeed what they have been doing. And unfortunately, we don't have congressmen and senators willing to impeach them when they violate the supreme law of the land by doing so. And what we need is those who are bold enough to say, these black-robed evildoers are breaking the law, and therefore they must be impeached. That's the constitutional remedy when you have somebody breaking the law on that level, to impeach them and remove them from office.
Or simply, they can simply, by majority vote, simply say the Supreme Court can have nothing to say about this legislation, and this legislation is going to decree there'll be, certainly teacher-led prayer in every classroom in America today. And, of course, put an appendage on there that says the Supreme Court and no other court can adjudicate this issue. That would be the end of it. But with a Christian president and with Republicans in control of both the House and the Senate, they just won't do anything like that because it's all showbiz, ladies and gentlemen. It's to give you the impression that we have deeply religious people in key positions in government, whereas we really don't. We have people who worship a different God.
Mm-hmm. Well, once the signers on September 17, 1787, signed off, they sent it on to the individual 13 states to begin a process where those states would ratify the Constitution. Now, of course, in that ratification process, a great deal of debate took place, and that debate centered around a number of different things. One of the major ones, though, was this: whether or not a Bill of Rights would be a good thing to have in addition to this Constitution. And this was calling back to the history of England, because historically Englishmen have thought it necessary to reassert their ancient rights. The first written example of this, of course, is Magna Carta. It wasn't that they didn't have any rights before this. It's that this was the first time on paper they asserted their rights with King John. By point of sword, they said, you either write and sign this Magna Carta, or you are going to be removed from your throne. And he saw the swords were rather persuasive, and so in spite of him not really wanting to secure the rights of Englishmen, nonetheless he signed the Magna Carta, which is the ancient statement of Englishmen's rights. And then later on there was other tyrannical kings, Charles I in the 17th century, and again, Englishmen had to assert their rights with a Bill of Rights in 1689 during the Glorious Revolution. They reasserted, they said, their true, ancient, and indubitable rights and liberties of the people. Actually, because the king resisted a number of different ways, finally he, the king, was executed. And I'm sure, because that's only a century before the era of our founders, I'm sure they had in mind, as they resisted King George III and wrote the Declaration of Independence, that if he was tyrannical to the nth degree, perhaps he would lose his head just as Charles I had lost his head. No king is above the law. They understood that, and therefore they structured a government where no human being is above the law, not the president, not the Supreme Court, not Congress. No one is above the law, and the supreme law of the land is this Constitution. Well, anyway, no Bill of Rights had been included in the Constitution because James Madison, who's usually called the father of our Constitution, James Madison said a Bill of Rights is absolutely unnecessary because the federal government has only been given by this Constitution limited delegated powers. There's no need, he said, to prohibit the government from doing what the government has no authority to do anyway. And actually, Madison is correct, because the design of the first seven articles of the Constitution says this is the only things that our federal government can do. Only these things, nothing else. Alexander Hamilton actually argued that the Bill of Rights would be dangerous because you could not possibly, if you sat down tonight with a pen and a paper and you listed all your rights, you could not possibly think of all of them in one sitting. And that would mean a future government might conclude that the rights not listed on your list were forfeited to the government. And so his argument, rights are better protected by relying upon established English and American common law.
Well, okay, so the Tenth Amendment really took care of that, because they said was, if the Congress has not been specifically given this power, or the power has been delegated to it by the states, then that power is reserved to the states and the people. In other words, it was a restricted covenant, and it said if the Congress has not specifically been given this right and authority, it can't do it. Well, boy, we've sure come a long way from there. The tyrants are at work, they keep centralizing ever more power. It tortures perfectly all right as long as it's on foreigners. Of course, if it takes place here, and don't believe it doesn't take place in our prisons today. Homosexuality is accepted in our prisons. We hear everybody joke about this and all the law and order programs. but it is actually encouraged in our prisons, and nothing is done to protect the people there. Why would you submit people to that sort of thing? Unless, of course, you were at totally evil people in positions of authority within our penal system.
Well, the arguments, as you say, Alexander Hamilton's argument as well as James Madison's argument were answered in the Bill of Rights that ultimately was amending our Constitution. And the lack of Bill of Rights was the principal objection of those who were opposed initially to the Constitution, people like Patrick Henry and George Mason, great, great heroes and patriots of our country. Thomas Jefferson actually liked the Constitution. He wasn't in the country at the time. He was representing us in France, and when he saw a copy of the Constitution, read it through, he said he liked it in general, but he regretted that it lacked a Bill of Rights. And so during the ratification debates that were taking place in all 13 states, the supporters of the Constitution promised those who were who found this a sticking point, they could not sign on, they could not ratify this Constitution unless there was a Bill of Rights. So the supporters of the Constitution in all the states promised that there would be a Bill of Rights as soon as the Constitution was ratified. And so the state ratifying conventions themselves, they didn't leave this up to Congress. They actually proposed about 350 specific amendments. Of course, many of these were duplicates of one another, and James Madison took that list of 350 and he worked it down to 12 amendments, and they were introduced in Congress in the year 1789. Now, the congressional committees actually reworked some of these amendments and passed each one of them following the amendment process of Article 5. And so as they passed through the House and through the Senate, then they were sent on to the states for the three-quarters of the states to ratify those first 10 amendments. And the necessary states, three-quarters of them, ratified the amendments in the year 1791. So those first 10 were all ratified as a block, and together are called our Bill of Rights. The 11th that was proposed dealt with congressional reapportionment and has never been ratified. The 12th amendment dealt with congressional pay raises, and initially it did not receive much support, but oddly, 200 years later, an interest was revived in this 12th amendment. And it was finally ratified by three-quarters of the states in 1993. And it's known as the 27th Amendment, stating that certain provisions in terms of pay raises for Congress, and we'll look at that when we get to the 27th Amendment. One of the important things to remember is, as we study the amendments, the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, all limit federal power. It's as if a high and impregnable wall was built around the federal government by the 10 amendments. They said, you must, federal government, remain within this wall. You only have power to act. You only have right to do anything, provided it remains within the walls surrounding you, and those walls are the Ten Amendments or the Bill of Rights. So the Bill of Rights really limit the federal government. And, by the way, they don't limit state or local governments directly, as we'll see when we look at some of the aspects of the 14th Amendment, the argument of the incorporation document, that doctrine rather, that is a false interpretation of even the 14th Amendment. But nonetheless, they limit the federal government. However, recently courts have been ruling that the Bill of Rights are incorporated into the 14th Amendment and thereby apply to all the states. For example, that's how they've gotten prayer taken out of school. They say, well, yeah, First Amendment doesn't just apply to Congress, which is what it says, Congress shall not, but it also applies to the state government and every level of the state government. So your local school board shall not establish religion and so on. Well, we know that's a false interpretation because established religions existed in 9 of the 13 states at the time of the ratification of this Bill of Rights. So obviously they were not saying the states couldn't establish a religion because they had established religions. They were saying the federal government and Congress cannot establish a national religion. What we also learn as we're going to study this Bill of Rights and the subsequent amendments is that while the first 10 amendments, the Bill of Rights, limits federal government, just about all the seceding amendments, the next 17, expand the power of federal government. And in other words, they do the opposite of what the Bill of Rights did initially. And that just tells you, as we study it, you'll see the history of the unfolding over time, that more and more encroachments began to be made in that wall that had been established by our founders around the federal government, saying you cannot operate outside of this. And bit by bit and brick by brick, that wall was being torn down. We'll see how many of the amendments subsequent to that actually contributed to the destruction of the design of the Bill of Rights to secure our God-given rights from tyranny on the part of the federal government.
And, of course, this is the thing. The American people do not understand that we have people in government who have a different vision of the way the world should be. They believe we need a ruling elite. They don't like this idea of putting restrictions on what they can do, because they think they're so much smarter than the rest of us. And so this is the battle that's going on. I wish we could say, well, we'll back this party or that party, and of course, they can champion our cause. The trouble is the leadership of both political parties is going exactly the same direction towards the all-powerful central government. It's not a matter of if, but which party will have the power. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up our program with our special guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. Well, David, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, when we look at these details that we're going to enter into, we need to understand that the design of our founders was only to secure those rights that God had given to us as human beings made in His image. And if we don't understand that, if we miss the purpose for which all of these rights were laid down, a different view enters in. You see, our founders had a biblical view of law and government. That is, they understood that the laws of nature and nature's God are the foundation of all that is truly lawful. Anything in violation of the laws of nature and nature's God is not lawful. Well, today, most people in government, in positions of leadership, whether elected or appointed, have a very different philosophy of government. They believe government is independent of God's law, and government is a law unto itself. And really, when we look at the Bible, what that is called is lawlessness. That is, there is only one law, only one true law, and that is God's law. It's revealed and given to us in His Word, the Bible. And so any law created by a human being that violates God's law is actually lawlessness. I know that's a really hard concept to get through our thick heads because we've been lied to so incessantly, and the propaganda is so thick that would say that anything spilled on paper, any ink spilled on paper by a legislature, signed by a governor or a president, and approved by a court system is therefore law. No. Things like the Supreme Court, Roe v. Wade, is lawlessness because they are violating the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not murder. You can't do that. That's illegal in America. That's a violation of the very foundations of the laws of nature and nature's God. So this idea that people today have, that law evolves and changes depending upon what the court rules, is completely foreign to our founders. As a matter of fact, they would have found it abhorrent. They would have stated that it is un-American. It is a traitorous opinion. And sadly to say, most of our leaders, elected officials, both on state and federal level, have this lawless view of government, this unbiblical view, and truly an un-American view. And the only way to change that is if we, the people, get an education ourselves and spread that education to a wide enough circle of people who will join us in overthrowing those who are lawless ones. And we don't overthrow them by force. We overthrow them at the ballot box by voting them out of office and putting those into office who will truly follow the design of our founders. So the first duty of every godly Christian citizen is to know these documents, to know the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights, and be able to...
Hold that thought, David, and we'll be right back here. Well, our guest is, of course, Pastor David Whitney. David, let's get your telephone number and your webpage out one more time.
Our toll-free number to call and order a host kit is 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And our website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com, where you can also go to our web store and order a host kit as well as other materials there.
Well, God bless you. Thanks so very much.
Thank you. God bless you, Dr. Stone.
Bye-bye. Okay, that's been Pastor David Whitney. Always a pleasure to have David with us. And we want to mention we're carrying something new. It's called our Founding Documents. It's the 50 Founding Documents of America, from the Declaration through the Bill of Rights to the Constitution to the Washington's Farewell Address and the Texas Bill of Rights and the Texas Declaration of Independence and Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, but all of the founding documents from the Mayflower Compact on are here in this known as the Freedom Documents. They're put together by our good friend, Pastor Chuck Baldwin. They're almost 2 inches thick, and he did a great job of putting this in a book form, something you'll want to keep by your side all the time. That's known as the Freedom Documents. And if you'd like to get a copy, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Remember, it's almost 2 inches thick, a massive amount of material, but easy to read, large print, and, of course, you want to have them there so you can review them and review them frequently. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Now, I do want to mention that we are primarily listener-supported. And we've had lost a few of two of our major supporters recently. They've had some financial difficulties, so we're having some difficulties. And if there's any way that you possibly could help us, why, we'd appreciate hearing from you. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. And I want to mention we are not tax exempt, mainly because we don't want the government to be able to tell us what to do. And if we were a 501c3 organization, they would be able to tell me what I could say and what I couldn't say. And I want to be able to really be able to tell you the truth. Now, I do want to mention that we're going to have our annual Radio Liberty Conference. It's going to be held on the 29th of October. It's a Sunday here in beautiful Monterey Bay. It's a beautiful time of year here ordinarily. And, of course, it's going to start in the morning. We're going to have Constance Cumby, and who has written extensively on the New Age, Chris Pinto, who wrote and produced the DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and a great lineup of speakers, and, well, we do hope that you can come. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. You have to make a reservation, and if you want, of course, information on rooms, we do have a block of rooms available, at least for another week and a half. At a reduced rate after that, while you're going to have to get rooms. And, of course, we'll be glad to send you a list of rooms. But if you'd like to, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Bring a friend. I really would like to get a good turnout. And I can tell you that having put these on for about 5 years now, at the end of the day, nobody wants to go home. Of course, we have to go home because we have to vacate the room for the next group that'll be there, but I think most people have really, really enjoyed being there. If you'd like to get a copy of our newsletter on the Christian History of America, why, we'll send it to you. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And, of course, you can find out about all the various things that we carry. We do have a 4-tape set called The Foundations of Our Freedom. That's the foundations of our freedom. And it really goes into a complete discussion of the background of our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights. And then, of course, we do hope many of you will get our book, Brotherhood of Darkness, that you get our other material that will take you into the background of the spiritual nature of the battle we're involved in. If you haven't read my pamphlet on the occult hierarchy that rules the world, that's the occult hierarchy. You need to get it. Because there is a spiritual dimension to everything going on. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment with the next hour here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And this evening, why we have with us Jack McClan from the Aid and Abet newsletter, and Jack has an organization where he tries to reach the police and the military in service in this country and throughout the world to let them understand about the move towards the New World Order. And that the fact that there are people who work at the leadership of both political parties who have no loyalty to America or to the Constitution they've sworn to uphold, they want to establish a world government under the control of a ruling elite, and they're using the military and financial power of the United States to accomplish that, and that is why we have troops stationed in 130 nations. That's why we have troops stationed in Germany and Japan 60 years after World War II ended. That's why we have troops stationed in South Korea 50 years after the Korean War ended. That is why we're in Afghanistan. That is why we are, you know, in Iraq. That is why we will soon, I fear, be at war with Iran, because that's the next stepping stone along the way. And what they're really trying to do is do everything possible to get the Muslims throughout the world to hate the Americans and get the American people to hate the Muslims. You can't have a war unless you have everybody hating everybody else. They had to get us to hate the Japanese during the Second World War. They had to get us to hate the Germans during the Second World War. And that, of course, is the major thrust of everything going on today. In fact, it was simply the weekend after the 9/11 attack, just a very, very few days after 9/11, when Time magazine, which is part of what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness, this elite group which controls our reality, Time magazine, sent out a special edition. And in that special edition of Time magazine, which carried no advertisements, so there was no money to be made, why would Time magazine be sending out magazines with no advertisements so there'd be no money to be made? Well, I believe that they were trying to actually control our reality. And, you know, if you actually... And I would like to read you what this article said at the very, very end of the magazine. For once, let's have no fatuous rhetoric about healing. Now, remember, this is just a few days after 9/11. And we're all in a state of shock at what we've seen. And the writer writes this. For once, let's have no fatuous rhetoric about healing. Healing is inappropriate now and dangerous. There will be time later for tears of sorrow. A day cannot live in infamy without the nourishment of rage. Let's have rage. What's needed is a unifying Pearl Harbor sort of purple American fury. A ruthless indignation that doesn't leak away in a week or two. Let America explore the rich reciprocal possibility of the fatwa, a policy of focused brutality. Does not come easy to a self-conscious, self-indulgent, contradictory, diverse human nation. But America needs to relearn why human nature has equipped us all with a weapon called hatred. That's what 9/11 was all about. It was to actually invoke hatred in the American people. And of course, today they're doing everything they can to get us to hate the Muslims and to get the Muslims to hate the United States. And, of course, you have to understand that these people know exactly what they're doing. But they can't let the American people understand what's really going on. Well, that is the background. We're going to have Jack McClam tell us about information he's getting from soldiers all throughout the world today, at least over in Iraq. Hi, Jack.
Hi, brother. How are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Why don't you pick up the story? I'm sure you heard my introductory remarks. I don't know whether you saw this issue of Time magazine. Came out right after 9/11. But I suspect that it was set up for one reason, and that was to invoke hatred for the Muslims.
Yes, indeed, brother, that's right. We have several psi warfare, psyops operatives who are now retired who have contacted us over the last year and a half. And they like our publication for police and military, and they've explained a few things to us. And basically, it's exactly what you and I know, brother, that psi warfare is being used upon the American people to prepare us to hate the Muslims. And according to one of these psi warfare operatives, psyops operatives, is now retired. He says that after communism was dead, which he laughed about because communism isn't dead, but after the American people were convinced that the wall fell down and communism was over and everything was going to be peachy keen, the international criminal elite started looking for another boogeyman. And they found the Muslims, who were 1.3 billion strong across the earth. And they decided if they could inflame the Muslims to start World War III, if they could push them far enough and kill them long enough and murder men, women, and children, and destroy their holy sites, that sometime, somewhere, they would finally have enough and have to strike back. And so this deep cover psyops operative that's now retired explained to me that this is what's going on right now. Every news program you put on, especially Fox News, every 10 minutes they're saying that we're going to be attacked by the Muslims and we're going to have to attack the Muslims and on and on and on. Every 10 minutes on Fox News especially, but it's on CNN, ABC, CBS, and so on too. And so you can sure see it, can't you, brother, how we're being inflamed. And even our soldiers are talking to us today about what they're being taught in a boot camp. And when they're getting ready to deploy over to the Middle East, they're being told that the Muslims hate you, they want to kill you. And over and over and over, the supervisory staff is coming in and pushing this hate, the Muslims, kill the Muslims before they kill you.
Hold that thought, we're going to be right back in just a moment here.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jack McLam. And we're talking about the fact that he's had some psyops operators. These are psychological operators who work for our CIA military, but these are people who are retired who've come to him and said, don't you understand? They're really trying to get us to hate the Muslims and try to get the Muslims to hate us. And basically, when, of course, communism was no longer the enemy, we had to have an enemy. And so we decided we would inflame 1.3 billion Muslims throughout the world. And after we'd attacked them and killed enough of them, then they would be quite willing to go to war with us. Now, the Muslims were not a factor. They did not hate America. America started financing this whole thing back in 1979 when, under the leadership of Zbigniew Brzezinski, of course, who's employed by David Rockefeller, Zbigniew Brzezinski brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power during the Carter administration and the radical mullahs in Iran, and so I personally believe they've had a degree of control over them ever since then. Of course, then we started the Afghan war, and of course we recruited hundreds of thousands of mujahideen and indoctrinated them in this radical form of Islam, and then we financed Al-Qaeda and the Taliban through the ISI. The ISI is the Pakistani intelligence that is still funding the Taliban today. And we're giving massive amounts of money to Pakistan, and Pakistan is allowing these madras schools, 20,000 of them, to teach hatred of America in Pakistan, is allowing the Taliban to operate there, and now, of course, they're reforming, going over into Afghanistan, where they're killing our troops and the NATO troops, and then pulling back across the border. what's wrong with this picture? Well, of course, we have to have an enemy. If we don't have an enemy, how will we be able to get the American people to hate the enemy? And how will we be able to get the enemy to hate us? So pick up the story there, Jack, because I think it's so important people understand that they're playing games with our minds, and we must not become haters.
That's
we must
right.
not let them make us or hate the Muslims. And there's the only way to deal with them is with the Christian message, certainly not by killing them. If they're coming to our country, it's one thing, but they're not coming to our country. We're going to their country, and we're destroying their wives and their children. Tell us about what many of the soldiers have been ordered to do in Iraq.
Yes, we have communications here at our two police and military associations with military people all the time, and some officers and a lot of enlisted talking to us about what they're doing over there and what they're having them do, and about just literally thousands and thousands and thousands of our young soldiers coming home. And I'm a Vietnam veteran, and so I'm talking as a vet myself. And Brother Stan, we have thousands and thousands and thousands of young girls and boys coming home that are truly messed up psychologically, and they can't deal with what they were made to do over there. My wife is one of these people. She was in the first Gulf War, and she was poisoned. She's a Gulf War sick vet. She was a first sergeant, had 50 people under her and handled the Apache and Cobra bases over in the first Gulf War. And but she saw so much death and destruction. She saw the highway of death. I don't know if a lot of Americans haven't heard of the highway of death.
Why don't you tell them about the highway of death? It's a war crime, of course,
yeah,
but nobody's ever held responsible for it.
Oh, yes.
How many people? What was the highway of death, and how many people died there?
Oh, my gosh. My wife has told me about it. I've read a little bit about it, and I don't know what the figures are. They're so varied. You know, government figures are only a few. But my wife saw and walked and rode the highway of death after it had happened. The U.S. government had napalmed the fleeing people out of the war zones, and most of them were men, women, and children, non-combatants. But there were some fleeing soldiers, Iraqi soldiers in the groups.
Well, no, these were not Iraqi. These were people pressed into service in Iraq. But they'd been forced, conscripted and forced to go in, and they were in Kuwait. And when the Americans came in, they wanted to get out. And so they formed a long column of vehicles that were trying to get back into Iraq, trying to get back to their wives and families.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And we blocked both ends. And then, of course, we sent the military planes in, and they napalmed and bombed and...
Yeah.
I've heard the tens of thousands of people were killed there.
It was horrible. And my wife still, it's been how many years since 1991 when she was in the Gulf War I, and she still, every single night almost, Dr. Stan, I'd say maybe one night out of five, she doesn't wake up with horrible, horrible memories and nightmares from what she saw over there. People literally... frozen through being burned to crispy critters, as we called it in law enforcement when we'd have a car fire, and people were just burned to a crisp. They were called crispy critters, and kind of not a nice name, but it was something that in order for us to deal with it, we had to deal with it the best we could when we'd see people like that. But she saw literally thousands of men, women, and children frozen in place from this napalm that just burned them. And when it burns so fast and so hot that all they have the time to do is open their mouths and cry, and their hands were still in the steering wheels, just burned right into the steering wheels,
and
kids were still being held by their mothers, and it's still in her mind, and almost every night she has these horrible nightmares, and we're bringing home thousands and thousands of young people that can't deal with reality today. They can't sleep. They wake up in cold sweats, screaming, and many times they're violent. And it's a process that they're sending American boys and girls through, Stan, that we're not used to this in America. You know, when I was in during the Vietnam War, I'll tell you, brother, if somebody killed a non-combatant on purpose, they were up on charges. And now we have people, soldiers, coming to us here because they can't get any hearing anywhere, like Army soldier Jody Casey, 29-year-old veteran of the occupation of Iraq. He served over there. And his quotes to us are, "I've seen innocent people being killed by our soldiers." He said, "You could basically kill whoever you wanted to. It was easy. You didn't even have to get off your vehicle and dig a hole or anything. You're driving down the road at 3 o'clock in the morning. There's a guy walking alongside the road. You shoot him and throw a shovel off." Well, I asked, "Why the shovel?" And he says, "Well, his unit and the other units were advised to keep shovels on their vehicles because each time they'd shoot an innocent Iraqi, they'd throw a shovel off beside him along the road as evidence that the dead civilian they just killed was in the act of digging holes to plant roadside bombs." Now, Army soldier Michael Blake, another veteran of Iraq, in the first year of occupation, he revealed to us that before they deployed, they went through a training session, of course, before you're deployed to Iraq, and all they heard was, "Iraqis hate you, Islam is evil, the Muslims want to kill you," repeated over and over and over to the soldiers. Psychologically, he felt preparing the soldiers to kill the Islamic people. Now, he's a 22-year-old veteran of the Second Gulf War here, and he says most of us guys believed it, that they hated us. Many innocent civilians were killed indiscriminately. He said when an IED would go off, the instructions were, and the practice was, to shoot anything that moved in the whole area and shoot up the landscape. That kind of thing happened a lot, he said, so many, many innocent people were killed. And when I saw you today, I talked to you about a SEAL team member that I talked to personally, how the war in Iraq has changed from the war in Vietnam and the war in other places that he had been, in Somalia, and I think he said Serbia and so forth. But before I say that, let me share with you a quote given to us by Sergeant Kevin Benderman. I guess you probably know him.
No, I really don't.
Okay. Well, I interviewed him on my show, and he told me, he says, "Jack, Vietnam was never like this. I've heard from Vietnam vets." He says it was never like this. He says that he and his fellow soldiers, Sergeant Kevin Benderman had been over there for about 6-7 months, served one tour, matter of fact, whole tour, but this was about 6-7 months in his tour, and his captain, who was in the Jeep with us, this big, what do they call them, these Hummers, these big Hummers they have over there, and some children, Iraqi children, were throwing rocks at the back of their vehicle. And the captain told him to kill the children, just to shoot the Iraqi children. Well, he didn't do it. He didn't follow the orders and got in trouble. He said when he got back to the state site is when I talked to him, because he also talked to his brother about killing families in homes just at random. For example, he said one day we were set up a mortar. We set up our mortar and was going to bomb a home. The commander said that there was movement in the home, and we were to set up our mortar and fire on the home. Well, they set up the mortar, and the mortar didn't work. And about the time they were working on the mortar to get it to work, a man came out holding a small child, a baby. His wife and three kids came out, and they were going to destroy that home because the commander looked in with FLIR radar, you know, these binoculars that can see through walls and see heat signatures, that people were moving around in there. And he says this was not uncommon at all. And so when he came back to the States, brother, I got a hold of him because I heard he wasn't going back, and he was going to say no to going back on a second tour. His group was going to go back. They had already been told they're going back for a second tour, and he says, "I'm not going." And I talked to him, and he says, I'm filing for conscientious objector status, and I'm not going. And I said, well, Sergeant, if they tell you to go back, you're going to miss movement.
Oh, we'll be back in just a moment with Jack.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, go ahead and tell the rest of the story.
Okay. Well, Sergeant Benderman did just that. He missed movement. He didn't go back, and he filed for conscientious objector status, saying he didn't want to kill any more men, women, and children. And they punished him. He's now in federal or in military prison for 15 months. And his wife, Monica, is sharing letters with us from him. But here's one of the letters he sent out. He said, I'm not going to run from my convictions. I'm staying. I'm not going to Canada. He says, I believe what I'm doing is the right thing. Whatever the consequences, I'll stay. And he says, you can train all you want to watch training videos, but you can't possibly know what combat is like until you experience it. He says, you can't burn a little girl's arm off in training, or have dogs eat human remains in training, or have soldiers actually shoot and kill real people. On my last deployment in Iraq, elements of my unit were instructed by a captain to fire on children throwing rocks at us. I refused to do that. And he's in military prison now for 15 months. And he's been there probably about 8 months now. And we're really proud of him, Dr. Stan, you know, because he's got a moral code. And what our government's trying to do is destroy the moral code of our soldiers, and many of them it works on. But when they get back here, they're destroyed psychologically, because there's something in the American man, woman, and children's makeup, brother, that doesn't let them cope with killing the innocent. You know,
well, they train them with these video games.
Yes.
To train them, it's all right to kill the people. And you use the video games and you kill these people over and over again.
Yes.
And they know that they can play games with their mind and get them to be turned into murderers and killers. But that's what the military is about. The purpose of the military is to kill people and destroy things. And that's one of the few things Rush Limbaugh ever said that I totally agreed with.
Yes.
The difficulty is that we are not being attacked by the people of Iraq. We were not being attacked by the people of Afghanistan.
Right.
In fact, if anybody who's read the 9-1-1 Staff Committee report, was that the Al-Qaeda leaders did not want to have any attack on America. The Taliban did not want to have an attack on America.
Right. Ghulam
Omar objected to what Osama bin Laden was doing.
Yeah.
But everybody's forgotten that we had financed Osama bin Laden for years, and he was being financed by Saudi Arabia, that was working hand in glove with the CIA. For every dollar that we put up, the Saudis put up a dollar, and that money went to Osama bin Laden. And of course, he was being funded and working in close concert with the CIA, but they can't tell the American people that. He is supposed to be the enemy. And, of course, probably he's been dead for some time, but they keep telling us he's alive, and we keep seeing his picture up there on the screen. And we're supposed to quake in fear. That's why we've got to keep killing people over in Afghanistan and Iraq, because if we don't, Osama bin Laden's going to get us. So this whole thing is organized madness, and there's no active resistance within America to what's going on. Our church leaders are going right along with the president's program of torture and of imprisonment, and we've killed certainly 100,000 Iraqi civilians. How do you justify that? Go ahead,
well,
Jack.
You can't do it, brother. You can't do it. And like I say, I've known soldiers all over the world, Australian, New Zealanders. And
hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Jack McLamb.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jack McLamb, of Aid and Abet Newsletter. And what's your official name of your organization, Jack?
We have two of them. We have Police and Military Against the New World Order, and then we have our publication, Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter on Constitutional Issues.
All right, fine.
Uh-huh.
Well, go ahead. You were just telling us that, you know, there is something inherent within most of our young people. They don't want to kill people, but the military wants to train them to kill people, because that's the purpose of the military, is to kill people, and we've killed over 100,000 Iraqi civilians. Why do we ever talk about that? don't know how many people we've killed up in Afghanistan. How do you justify that? Well, we went into Afghanistan to get the wicked Osama bin Laden, but, of course, we let him get away. We attacked Iraq because, of course, we had to get Saddam's weapons of mass destruction because he was going to attack America at any time. Do you remember that, the urgency? It's almost the same line you're hearing now. We've got to attack Iran quickly before they get weapons of mass destruction and destabilize the entire world. Does anybody out there really believe that Iran is going to attack the entire world with their nuclear weapons?
If they listen to enough of our TV news, they probably will begin to believe it because it's a brainwashing session every single day. They just hammer it and hammer it and hammer it. I want to share with you a U.S. Marine Corps General, James N. Mattis, or Mattis, M-A-T-T-I-S, what he said that upset a lot of superior officers, officers not superior to him, but I mean, you know, high-ranking officers. He gave a speech February 3rd, 2005, to a lot of high-level Marine officers, and he said, you know, it's a hell of a hoot. It's fun to shoot some people, he said. I'll be right up front with you. You go to Afghanistan, you got guys who slap women around for 5 years because they don't wear a veil. So it's a hell of a hoot to shoot them. And this is the mentality today. We have a lieutenant colonel who took issue with that. He said, I'm an Army military officer, lieutenant colonel, who served in war for my country in three different wars. I served tours in the Middle East. I don't remember any time in American history when our soldiers were told to kill civilians. And I don't believe there was another time. So why today, he said. Why in these wars against the Muslims are we instructed to kill non-combatant men, women, and children? Why this idiot, Lieutenant General Mattis, would get up and state it's fun to kill people is beyond me. He said he should not be leading any American troops. In all of my two decades of service as an officer, I've never heard any soldier say it's fun to kill people. If a soldier was heard to say that, why, we'd have him immediately before a psych exam. This general needs help, he said. Well, back to the question, why today is it fine to kill non-combatants? He kind of goes off the subject here and talking about the Muslims and the Israelis here. But he ends with saying this. He says, no less an authority than mass murderer Henry Kissinger, who once remarked, military men are dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns for foreign policy. He said he was correct in regards to the neocons who consider their goal for world dominion and not all the lives of tens of millions of people, including our soldiers. So he's rather outspoken, but he asked us not to use his name because he did call the general certain names, said he was an idiot and all. But a great example of a man I interviewed who I was supposed to be in the SEAL teams when I was in the military. I was told I was going to be a SEAL team member. Of course, they called it UDT back during the Vietnam War. And so I know some of these guys, and this one SEAL team member and I talked, and he said, Jack, it's totally different in Afghanistan and Iraq, where he served in both places. He says, things have really changed. He says, now, instead of like we used to clear a building when we would kick in a door and go in with our night vision equipment on and our military weapons at the ready, he said, we used to take any non-combatants out of the rooms and have our guns on them, of course, take them out of the building, set them down, and have a team member watch them until the team cleared the home or building. And then after a pat-down, the non-combatants, if we believe they were non-combatants, would be returned to their homes and office buildings. He says, not anymore. He says, the thing that's changed is now when we clear a building in Iraq or Afghanistan, a home or an office, We don't take prisoners. When we kick in a door, we go in, find a couple or individual crouched in
thought.
The corner
Hold that thought.
Of the room.
Hold
okay.
that thought.
All right.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jack was just saying that things are different today in Iraq. And when, of course, they go into a building, and there are people there, there's civilians there, and so what did he say happened?
He said that when somebody's crouched in a corner, a couple or a family or individual, he says we're to put a double tap in their head, each person, which means two gunshots to the head, and then continue to clear the other rooms, and every time we find somebody crouched or hiding under a table or something or bed, we put two shots in her head, and we go to the next room, and we clear the home or building. He said it's like in Vietnam. There's an old saying in Vietnam, and I used to hear it. It's kill them all and let God sort them out. It was kind of a joke. But, of course, in Vietnam, brother, our soldiers weren't allowed to do that, and they certainly weren't instructed to kill non-combatants, you know? So why is it today that this is going on? That's the big question of a lot of our soldiers today. And it's strange, brother, but I think maybe the closest we come to the answer is what you were talking about earlier. There's two answers according to our Jewish police and military people that we deal with all the time. We've got some great, as you know, great American Jewish police officers and soldiers that we've worked with for years and years. And they say the same thing, that we're trying to ignite the Muslim people to start World War III, that 1,200,000,000 people around the earth, by destroying their religious sites and destroying families and just killing people at random, men, women, and children, and trying to ignite the Muslim world. So that the international criminal cabals that control our governments can have World War III. And our soldiers are pretty smart. They say what will happen once the Muslims explode across the earth and actually stand up and start fighting, which they don't want to do, but they have to do it out of survival, they will fear, is that there will be blood in the streets across the earth. And the people in the very near future, after blood is running in the streets across the earth, will cry out from all these nations for world peace. And, of course, our international criminal cabal has the world peace system, the Marxist-led United Nations system for all of us to have world peace in, and we'll be put under the United Nations utopian world government system of the super rich and the super poor, and the international criminal cabal will have accomplished their goal.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Jack McClam. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jack was simply saying that they have, he knows a Navy SEAL, you know, who's over there operating on special assignments in Iraq, and the SEAL is very disturbed because in the past you'd go into a building, you know, and there were civilians there. You'd simply usher them outside, keep them under surveillance, you'd tap them down to make sure they didn't have any weapons, and when the building had been cleared, well, you'd put them back in. That policy has changed, and they're told to kill the civilians, to put bullets into their heads, to kill men and women and children in buildings. And, of course, the question is, why would you do something like that? And Jack is saying that he's talked to some of his other friends, you know, who are certainly very close to what's going on, and they tell him that the purpose is to inflame the Muslim world because they're people who want World War III. And I honestly believe that. I think that we're doing everything we can to create World War III. World War I was fought to bring about the League of Nations. And they felt that out of the horror and the devastation and the chaos of World War I would come a cry for world government. And it did. They lost 21 million people in World War I. And, you know, of course, most of them were Europeans, and the European people were willing to give up their sovereignty, do anything, and never to have to go through a horrible situation like that again. Probably twice that many casualties, people who would bear the pain of their wounds to their death, but 21 million dead, probably, 40 million wounded. And World War One would have brought a world government, only the Americans didn't go into the world government. Henry Cabot Lodge, Senator Henry Cabot Lodge, blocked that in the Senate. So then we had to have World War Two, and we won't go into the background of how American corporations built up Adolf Hitler and encouraged Adolf Hitler and helped Adolf Hitler before and during the war. And of course, the situation with Japan, where Hirohito was a member of the Secret Order of the Garter, that, of course, the English nobility all belonged to. Emperor Hirohito was never tried for his war crimes. And then, of course, when World War II failed to bring about a world government, then, of course, we're going to need World War III. And I really fear that Jack is absolutely right. We're doing everything we can to inflame the Muslim world, and the Muslims had no desire to fight us, and Al-Qaeda was financed from its inception by our own government. We know that the Abu Sayyid group in the Philippines, the Muslim terrorist organization, was organized by the Philippine government. And, of course, we know that certainly in Ireland, why, the Irish Republican Army, these terrorists, terrible Irish Republican Army, the number two man was a British agent. The chief torturer and murderer for the IRA was a British agent. He was killing people. Now, if the British could set up an organization that was fighting Great Britain and they controlled it, is it just too radical to believe that we might very well be helping to finance the very movement that we're opposing today to justify expanding the war against Iraq and against Iran and then Syria and other Muslim nations, hoping we would bring on World War III? Do you think that's what it's about, Jack?
I believe this is it. According to what we're hearing from our military people, high-level military people many times, nobody above colonel is communicating with us at this time, because the generals, if they don't like what's happening, they've quit. And the other generals who are high command officers that talk to us have been promoted because they're going along with this globalist plan. So the generals aren't complaining that are there now. They're part of the plan to inflame the Muslims across the earth to start World War III, to have people accept this world government system of peace. Of course, the Bible says they'll holler peace, peace, but there won't be any peace, and that's exactly what's coming.
Now, but of course, the thing is, we start World War III. This could very well end up with a nuclear exchange of some sort.
Yes.
If we go to war with Iran and Syria, we're going to inflame the Muslims of Pakistan. They're going to overthrow Musharraf, and then the Islamic radicals will have nuclear weapons. Because, of course, the Taliban, the radical Muslims, are working openly in Pakistan, and we're financing Pakistan. We're financing the very people are going to overthrow Musharraf, and then they're going to have nuclear weapons with a very efficient means of nuclear weapon delivery. And the American people have no idea what's going on. They can't believe that we would be betrayed by our own leaders who want a world war. And yet, if you read Henry Kissinger's recent article in the Washington Post, he will tell you that, of course, we're moving towards he doesn't use the word class of civilizations, but he certainly infers this is exactly what it's all going to be about.
That's right. All on purpose, too, brother. Yes. We're hearing some very disturbing things, Dr. Stan, from our military people and also high-level law enforcement people in the federal government and even some of the state governments. Something is happening right now. We know, and here at our two police and military associations, we've collected the proof, if we could ever get in a court in the land, and we probably never will, it doesn't seem like, because all the judges at the top level are bought and paid for, are willing to shoot their mother for a nickel and take bets on which way she'd fall, so they've been promoted up to these high-level district judges' positions. So we don't think we'll ever get into the courts in the land, but we can prove to any jury in the land that Oklahoma City bombing was an inside job. We can prove in any court in the land, as you know, that the first World Trade Center bombing was an inside job using the FBI and others, CIA operatives, to set up that bombing of the World Trade Center. it didn't come off like they wanted because the dummies that they hired didn't put the truck close enough to the pillars to knock the building down. But they did kill some people. And then, of course, we could prove in any court in the land 9/11 was an inside job. And so now we're hearing from top officials, like I say, nothing above colonel, but that's pretty big for us boots on the ground. You know, colonel's pretty far up there. But they're saying now that the government of the United States is salting the Rio Grande, the banks of the Rio Grande. And we've done our research and talked to some of the sheriff's deputies in the Rio Grande area along the southern border from Mexico and America. And sure enough, they're finding Iranian money along the banks of the Rio Grande, and they're finding listen to this, brother. How stupid would these Iranian undercover terrorists be that they come across the border with their pockets stuffed with Iranian money, and they carry their Iranian military jackets, which they found along the Rio Grande, and the sheriffs are coming forward and telling the press and telling the public that the Iranian bombers are here and they're going to blow up America because they found this Iranian money in these Iranian military jackets.
And, of course, what they're really trying to do is, Iran's the enemy. We're going to have to attack Iran and kill all them before kill us.
That's right. And now we're hearing from our military that the word is out that the Iranians are already here. The bombers are here, and they have tactical suitcase nukes, already in America ready to blow us up. Now, what we fear the most is that we're going to have a nuclear attack on American people before the election comes up, because George W. Bush has a number of things he needs to do. One is he's got to get into Iran and Syria very soon because he's got his marching orders from his overlords in the international crime cabal, because he's just a lowly lieutenant, the Bush family is, in this oligarchy, this world oligarchy. And he's been given his orders to go into Iran and Syria, and he can't get in there because he's bogged down in Iraq and Afghanistan, which is going crazy again now. The war is building and building. And so he needs to have what they call the universal draft of our boys and girls this time. It's already in the Congress, and he has to have a big incident in the United States to get the American people to offer their children up to Moloch. And give their children and male and female children over to him for wars against the Middle East countries. And he needs martial law in America. He has to suspend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And he's got to get in Iran and Syria. And a bombing in the United States, brother, just like the World Trade Center, 9/11, the American people will swoon at his feet and pray for safety and security, and will allow him to do anything he wants to do.
But you know, Jack, I think
That's what we're hearing, brother, from our military, high-level military people is going on right now. I don't know if it's true, but it looks like by them salting the Rio Grande with Iranian money and military jackets, which we know as police investigators that these deep-cover Iranian saboteurs and terrorists would not come in here with Iranian money, which they couldn't spend anyway, and they wouldn't carry their military jackets across the border.
I think you're absolutely right. But, you know, I think that on the other side, I think there's a growing awareness on the part of the American people. And a recent poll showed somewhere between 39% and 40% of the average Americans do not believe they've been told the truth about 911.
That's right.
So I think that we just have to keep pushing along. I was at a meeting this weekend, and a very nice gray-haired lady came up to me, and she said, you know, my son was up to visit me the other day, and he was telling me that our government was behind the 911 attack. How can I counter him? And I said, well, can you explain to me why Building 7 came down? Building 7, you know, wasn't hit by a plane. Why would that building have come down, the whole base of it exploded? And she said, I don't know why. And I said, well, did you ever stop to think that maybe what your son is saying is accurate?
Yes.
And, you know, in fact, she said, well, I guess I'll go home and watch those videos he gave me, like Loose Chains. And,
oh, yeah.
And I said, fine, you go home and you watch that, and then you help us to get to other people. And I think more and more people are beginning to learn. I think that the Alex Jones American, organization, I've forgotten the American Scholar Symposium, I think was the name, shown at least three or four times there on C-SPAN. I think that people are beginning to tell people, and they're beginning to ask, how could this possibly have happened? And now the information is out that on that very morning that there were military exercises that were being used to plant false images on the screens, and the CIA and the intelligence were planting these false images on the radar screens at the FAA and at NORAD, so they didn't know whether it was a real attack or a hijacking, and the planes that were supposed to be guarding Washington, D.C. were off somewhere up in Alaska or in Canada on military exercises. And I don't think most people are gullible enough to believe that Osama bin Laden arranged all that. I think people are really beginning to wake up, Jack.
They are, brother. They are. Our news, our communications here at our two police and military associations have never, ever been as busy with not just police and military getting a hold of us, brother. I get 250 email a day. I'm 38,000 behind in answering them right now because we don't have enough volunteers here to help. But our phone calls, our letters, we've never had such communication. And I can tell you definitely more and more people waking up. I'm pouring over my desk here. You might can hear my papers rattling. But I'm looking for my MSNBC poll that I just read on my show last week, and I can't seem to locate it. But anyway, the MSNBC poll that they had 50,560 answers to, respondents, on that poll it showed 51% of the American people, when asked if they believed the government was complicit in any way in 9/11, said yes. 51%.
Well, that's a new poll, and after the growing number of people out there, I want you to get your telephone number, your website out, Jack, so our listeners will know how to get in touch with you and get your excellent information.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very much. Yes, people should understand that our number one goal of all our volunteers here for the last 25 years, we've been volunteers for 25 years, police and soldiers, are to reach our brothers and sisters in uniform and get them to say no to immoral and unlawful orders, and orders that violate their constitutional oath that they took to the American people, not to the system. So, all the listeners out there, if you can help us put one of our publications in the hands of one of our brothers and sisters in uniform, please do so, because they listen to us. Many times they don't listen to private citizens, but they do listen to their peers. So here's our information, folks. If you'd like to go to our website, the best way to get to it, instead of putting police and military against the New World Order, just put down Jack McLam, www.jackmclam, and my last name is spelled M-C, capital L-A-M-B, just like a lamb, McLam.com. That's www.jackmclam.com, and you'll come right to our police and military against the New World Order website and read all about our publication, Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter, and so forth. And get copies of it, if you would. Write to us, and we will send them out to you. If you don't have a computer, let me give out our address real quick here. Instead of putting Aid and Abet Police Military Newsletter, folks, just get out an envelope and put a capital A and the and sign, and then put another capital A. So on the envelope, you'll just have A and A. That'll get to us. We're in a very small community up here in the Rocky Mountains. And send it to HC, like Hotel Charlie, 11, Box 357, like the Magnum I carried on duty my whole career in Phoenix, Arizona. 357, that's Box 357, KAMIH, K-A-M-I-A-H, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536, 83536, HC11, Box 357, KAMIH, K-A-M-I-A-H, Idaho, 83536. And we'll send you out one of our latest Aid and Abet Police Military newsletters, and you'll see what soldiers and police officers talk to each other about during this time of great tribulation in our country today. And so please, when you get a copy, read it and pass it on, put it in the hands of a police officer or soldier in your family. And Dr. Stan, you know how it works. Once one of our police officers or soldiers get one of our publications, they share it with others in their military unit and in with their police department. Usually they have partners and buddies and friends, and they'll pass it around. And so you really start a small geometric progression when you hand out one of Dr. Stan's books or one of our Aid and Abet Police Military newsletters, because it gets passed around and around and around. So that's what we'd like to ask them to do. We need our police and soldiers back on the side of the American people.
And really, they don't know. They're good people, but they're told really efforts are made. It's us against them. It's not. We're all on the same side. It's the internationalists, the globalists, it's the people of great power. It's people in key positions in the police and the military and the FBI and the CIA who are serving their globalist masters. We want the police to serve the American people. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here with Jack McLaren. Well, Jack, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, brother. All right. Well, one thing I wanted to say, brother, is we've received a report of the recruiting going on right now. And you could do an almost a whole show on the recruiting, because our recruiters now are recruiting hundreds of thousands of non-citizens right now. They're going down into Mexico and recruiting illegal aliens, and many of them are Marxist revolutionaries, because I fought them on the streets of Phoenix. And believe me, some of them aren't fruit pickers. And they're recruiting them into our military, and they're recruiting mercenaries into our military. And I've worked with some of these guys in the war during Vietnam, who's willing to do anything to anybody for money. And then they're also recruiting gang members and criminals. And we have all that information from reports that we've received here. They're recruiting psychiatric patients out of psychiatric wards, and they're destroying our military. But what they're also doing, brother, is they're recruiting those that when they're given an order to kill people, and maybe even the American people, they will not hesitate. They have gang members by the thousands now in the military, most of them not American citizens. And in Iraq now, they're having trouble with going into Baghdad and other places. The gang members, I don't know, they got their TA-50 gear on, their helmets and their, all their equipment, and yet they have a can of spray paint, and they're putting their gang signs on the buildings in Baghdad and other places down there. So we're building a military just like Stalin and Hitler did, by opening the prisons, it seems like, and bringing in people that'll kill and follow any order whatsoever they're given. So that truly upsets those of us that love our military people. We want to caution moms and dads, as one of our great colonels told us, that moms and dads, don't let your kids grow up to be soldiers today. And it's sad to say that, because I'm an old soldier, but that's the way it is. I wouldn't put my kid or grandkid in the military today for anything, brother.
Well, I share your concern, Jack, and our job, though, is to try to take America back. We need every American. We need every soldier. We need every police officer. We need everybody who loves America and wants to preserve our way of life to get them educated, get Jack's material, and begin getting it to the police officers. And believe me, the other side hates Jack's material. In fact, some places in the military, why, they'll actually almost threaten you with a court-martial if you're found with Jack's material. Why? It's patriotic, that's why, and it's filled with love of America. We'll be right back here. Well, Jack, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to having you on one of our other programs later this week.
Okay, brother, I'm looking forward to it. You're one of my heroes, Dr. Stan.
Well, you're one of mine, too, Jack.
That.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Jack McLaren, and Anyway, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And right now, we could really use your help. We've got a little behind. And so if there's any way you can help us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Or you can write to us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. And, of course, as you know, we're having our annual seminar. It's going to be on the 29th of October, and they're going to have great guests. It's going to be a great day. And so if you can make it, why, give us a call. And if you're coming from outside the area, let me suggest you make your reservations now. We do have a special rate on the hotel for another couple of weeks. And after that, why, we'll just have to give you a list of the various places to go. But I will tell you, at the end of the day, having put these on for about 5 years, at the end of the day, nobody wants to go home. Anyway, you'll have a great time, and we'll look forward to seeing you. And again, of course, we certainly want to mention that if you have not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. It's a primer to begin to introduce you to what's really going on. We have a wonderful book. It's called Diary of a Devil Hunter, a man who is deeply involved in Satanism in the United States. We have a four-tape set on the supernatural with interviews with Johanna Michelson, and we carry her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. You have to understand that there is a spiritual dimension to everything going on. We have certainly Constance Cumby's book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. In fact, you can get that by itself, or I believe you get that as part of the Pagan Agenda special. Has all sorts of books that will take you into this other dimension that has such a profound impact on the people who control the world in which we live. I was up on a Luciferian website today, and there what I found among the supporters, the Jimmy Carter, Jimmy and Rosalind Carter Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Now, I'm not saying they know the background of the Goodwill Service or World Goodwill Service, but certainly, the people who run this organization are an extension of the Lucius Trust, which used to be, of course, the Lucifer Publishing House. And those who have given their lives to the dark side prosper beyond their wildest dreams. And let me simply point out that if you have not yet seen the video, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. The new video we're carrying, entitled Rape of the Soul. If you have not yet seen the latest video by Pastor Joe Schimmel, The Da Vinci Con, Hollywood's War Against America, or Megiddo 1 or Megiddo 2, or certainly The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, which takes you into the secret societies that were here when America was founded, you need to get the information. You need to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. There are 3 pamphlets for $9.95, all 3 of them. They actually will give you insight into the forces that are working behind the scenes in America today. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. Consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And then, of course, you'll get either 4 best tapes or CDs of the month, and you'll get our monthly newsletter. Encourage other people to listen to our programs. You can hear us 5 hours a day on the Internet, 3 hours a day at RadioLiberty.com, an hour a day at GCNLive.com, an hour on AmericanNewsNet.com, an hour on RBNLive.com, which is, of course, the program you're listening to now. We have an outreach. We need your help to continue and to expand that outreach when the opportunity arises. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, pray for our leaders, our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And so, remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, until tomorrow when we'll be back with you at the same time, here on the same station. Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation. It is Monday, the 18th of September.